Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home for original reporting.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. A vigil is held on the campus of Michigan State University to honor those lost and hurt in Monday night's shooting on campus. CBS's Matt Piper.
Thousands gather on the MSU campus to hug, cry, and grieve. Student body president Joe Kovach.
There's no rule book telling you what to do in these situations. We just have to live each day from here on out, reaching out for help when we need it and getting through the harder days together.
School Provost Teresa Woodruff.
We remember and honor the three Spartan students so cruelly taken from their families.
Police will give an update on their investigation into the deadly rampage Thursday. Matt Piper, CBS News.
Erie County Court Judge Susan Egan tells the man who shot and killed 10 black people at a supermarket in Buffalo, New York last May.
You will never see the light of day as a free man ever again.
Kimberly Salter spoke about the loss of her husband, security guard Aaron Salter.
My family and I are here this morning, and we wear red and black. Red for the blood that he shed, and black because we are still grieving.
At one point during the sentencing, a man lunged at Peyton Gendron, but deputies took him out of the room briefly. U.S. officials confirms to CBS News that the FBI conducted two searches at the University of Delaware in recent weeks in connection to the probe into President Biden's handling of documents marked classified. It's not known if they found any such documents. The head of the FAA testifies before the Senate Commerce Committee about the January computer outage that grounded flights nationwide. CBS's Nicole Killian.
1 month after the first nationwide ground stop since 9/11.
Every single flight in the country is stopped.
I'm really upset, but what can I do?
Senators on Capitol Hill demanded answers from acting FAA Administrator Billy Nolen, who told lawmakers the widespread outage to its pilot notification system was caused by outdated technology that's at least 30 years old and contractor error.
Hollywood has lost a 60s icon, CBS's Steve Futterman reports.
Here's beautiful Raquel Welch.
Raquel Welch shot to fame in the film 1 Million Years B.C. in an iconic scene posing in a deerskin bikini. She would be known forever for her beauty. At times, she fought against it.
Well, I don't really consider myself a sex symbol.
Raquel Welch appeared in more than 30 films, often portraying strong female characters, and also appeared on Broadway. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Tesla is going to open up some of its electric vehicle chargers. WWJ's Jeff Gilbert.
About 7,500 of Tesla's nearly 18,000 chargers will be open to others by the end of the year. No word how billing will work or how the chargers will adapt to the different connections used by other EVs.
This is CBS.
Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Wisconsin is getting more than $25 million from Washington to do something about PFAS pollution in drinking water. The money comes from the Environmental Protection Agency under the bipartisan infrastructure law. The EPA is spending $5 billion over the next 5 years to help communities across the country with PFAS contamination in their drinking water. The Wisconsin Supreme Court will not get involved in the fight between UW Health and its nurses who want the Madison-based healthcare system to recognize their union. That sends the legal fight back to Dane County Circuit Court. The nurses are happy with the decision. A spokesperson says UW Health tried to get around the regular legal process to get a favorable ruling from the High Court's conservative majority. In sports, the Bucks beat the Celtics in overtime last night. The Badgers beat Michigan. Tonight, Marquette hosts Xavier. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which right. was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
Look through your children's eyes, and you will discover the true magic of a forest.
Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
The SHA 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com. The SHA 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUK.
Never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here, and welcome. Welcome to Final Throws, Late Stage Capitalism. Here we are, 21st century style, the end of an era, if you will. Enormous corporate greed. Marry that with incompetent and, compromised governments. You throw in a little bit of... neglected rural communities, and what do we got? Well, I look at the corporate greed that we're seeing. What, in 2022, Norfolk Southern pocketed $4.8 billion in profit and used a lot of it for stock buybacks. We've got a cash-compromised government. You got officials who said, nothing over the week and a half before, they figured out that, hey, we could use this to get the other side. Let's not forget the unions that have been crushed and handicapped by 40 years of supply-side voodoo Reaganomic economic policy and theory that said, go on, corporate America, go get those workers. And, of course, let's not forget the neglected small towns who are helpless to stand up to either. Welcome to where we are, America. And, I looked at this, and there's some things on the social medias that ask good questions. When Republicans figured out they could attack Pete Buttigieg, this is when this got attention. Stop and think about how it sparked. We were talking about this last week. This week, it sparked some attention. Oh, my goodness. Pete Buttigieg didn't say anything. Well, neither did the congressman in that district either. And you would think the guy who's, those are his people. Those are the people that he's supposed to represent, Republican Bill Johnson. You would think he'd have put out a statement, something nice and mealy-mouthed and soft about, oh, I care about my people. Didn't even do that until he was scheduled to go on the F channel to talk about how Biden and Buttigieg are doing nothing. And look, I got my problems with Biden and Buttigieg on this issue because there's a lot of blame to go around. But I find it interesting that it only came to light, it only came to the front of the media structure when Republicans go, hey, this is a way to go beat up on those Democrats. And then people start going, well, what about the working people? Now, here's the thing. This is the weird part of this. This should be nonpartisan, completely nonpartisan. The person we should know his name is not Buttigieg or Biden or any of the idiots on the right who have made this an issue to attack Biden and Buttigieg. We should know the name of Alan Shaw. And you go, well, who's Alan Shaw? Thank you, mainstream media, for not pointing out that he's the CEO of Norfolk Southern. Huge salary. Lives in an 8,000 square foot mansion. Was supposed to show up and address the good people of East Palestine, address their concerns, keep them up to date. What's going on? And do you think he showed up? No, didn't show up. Were we surprised? No, not surprised at all. And the thing is why don't we know the names of these CEOs who do these things? I had to look him up. I didn't know who he was. Why aren't these the people who are being blamed? Why aren't these the people who are going to jail? The statement that's going around all over the place is, you know, hazardous material specialist Cagliano, I guess his name is. He said, we basically nuked a town with chemicals so we could open up the railroad. And that's the reality on a certain level. We allowed them to, one, continue to push and destroy safety regulations, be unsupervised, because, again, we have this bizarre belief that Allen and the board of directors at Norfolk Southern care about those people in East Palestine. East Palestine. You know, if his 8,000 square foot mansion was in East Palestine, I'll guarantee you there'd be some stuff going on. But it's not, because this isn't somebody else's backyard. This isn't poor and working class people's backyards. This isn't in the well-to-do areas where our CEO class in their gated communities. You don't see the train going through their backyard. No. And this, again, is another one of those moments that you look at this whole system, this whole stinking system of massive corporate greed, government officials that are at the behest of these corporate titans, unions that have been hobbled and handicapped and beaten over the decades, and small towns who are incapable of standing up to any of them or doing anything. The fact that Norfolk Southern offered the town of East Palestine $25,000, as you know, oh, here's something to help you get through this little minor tragedy, this tiny little spill, which equates to about $5 a resident, $5, and did this with a straight face. And again, I keep going back to, remember, Republicans thought this was an opportunity to lay all the responsibility at Biden and Buttigieg's feet without anyone asking the question and going, wait a second, isn't this your ideology? Aren't you and your conservative ideologues responsible for this? Isn't this pro-business run amok? Isn't this globalization and corporatization and deregulation run amok? Isn't that this? Answer, yes. Because we're now getting early reports on what the cause was. And I said from the beginning, there were reports that the train was on fire. It turns out it was reportedly on fire for like 20 miles before, oops, it finally derailed. Turns out, according to the NTSB, their report today that came out said NTSB investigators have identified and examined the rail car that initiated the derailment. Surveillance video from a resident showed what appears to be a wheel bearing in the final stages of overheat failure moments before the derailment. The wheel set, they got it. They know which one it is. They're sending it off to be tested in their, you know, in their labs. The valve that failed, they've got that because they blew up the train. They're going to send that off to be tested. And you know where this is all going to go. And I said from the beginning, eventually they're not going to blame Alan Shaw. They're not going to blame the board of directors. They're not going to blame the railroad industry for their precision scheduled railroading that has, you know, gutted tens of thousands of workers, has said, screw safety, we don't care. You know, none of that. They're going to lay it at the feet of the workers who were supposed to do those inspections in 90 seconds and look at 120 different things. That's where this is going to go. And you go, when do we wake up? Now, understand, according to the Government Accountability Office, in order for the railroads to save money, what'd they do? They made trains longer. So you have these bigger, longer trains and add fewer people doing these jobs. So you've got fewer people per car checking this stuff. They point out between 2008 and 2019, train lengths have increased by 25%. So that train that was going out of the station, you know, in 2008 is now a quarter bigger. And you go, well, that's just saving money for the company. Yeah, but they're doing it with far fewer employees. They also point out, according to a report over at USA Today, that regulators have found that hazardous material violations are way up. In fact, 36% more hazmat violations. Because again, as we heard, you know, a couple of days ago from our friend over at the Smart Union, they've gotten rid of the people who are trained and qualified to do these inspections. So you've got, you know, supervisors, you've got people pencil whipping things through. And again, this is predictable. This is what the union workers were screaming about over the summer for the last couple of years, to be honest. And what the Biden administration dropped the ball on. We wanted to get them the best income. We wanted to get them this, but weren't listening to all the problems. The sick days were a huge problem, but the safety was also a huge problem. And the fact that we didn't listen, the fact that we didn't push for it, and even look, even I said, there's no way Congress, there's no way the president, there's no way they're going to let these guys go on strike. There's just no way. So they've got to get in there and impose things on the rail industry, because the rail industry is not going to ever voluntarily do anything that's going to cost them more money. Inspections cost them money. More personnel costs them money. And they've sat down, they've done the bean counting. They've gone, okay, so let's say we have a little derailment. Yeah, let's say we have, you know, 11 hazardous material cars full of, you know, nasty toxic stuff, you know, spill into the water there in East Palestine, Ohio, and you know, head down the river through the state of Ohio to the Mississippi. So let's say that happens. What's it cost us? And they actually figure out they're going to pay the little town $25, $5 a head, $25,000. Maybe they pay another one, a couple of bucks, because they know they can steamroll these little towns. They know they can steamroll elected officials with their massive lobbying arm. So they've made the calculus. So we have one of these. You know, we'll chalk it up to human error. We'll blame one of those workers. And we'll get away with it. And no one's going to come after us. And it's not just, look, it's just not the rail industry. It's every one of these massive industries that get away with consolidating to the point to where they're even more powerful than the federal government, where they can hold this government hostage. Look, the railroads could hold this country hostage. And they knew that. It wasn't that they couldn't afford sick days. It wasn't that they couldn't afford better safety procedures. It wasn't because they couldn't afford to replace bearings on these. It wasn't that at all. It's because they didn't want to. It's not because they couldn't afford it. Get out of here. They didn't want to. What they wanted is they wanted to live in their 8,000 square foot mansions. They wanted to line their pockets with huge stock buybacks. And again, this comes back down to policy. And this again goes to the heart of the people who are screaming the loudest, my Republican friends and conservative Democrats, who let these companies get away with this. Been talking about this for years, which again is the reason that you need to have strong unions. And you go, well, you know, these workers have a union. Yeah. But only to such a point. Because federal law, if you look at what the Railway Labor Act does, basically neuters their ability to take any direct militant action. This is why, again, we need to have a strong, vibrant labor movement to stand up and fight these things. Seriously, think about this with me. And you know, I've used the analogy of, you know, if you're the only person on the road with a radar gun, are you going to speed? The answer is yeah. These corporations, they don't care about the communities. They don't care about their workers. Yeah, we see flowery language. We see commercials. And yeah, in some rare circumstance where the owner is still on site occasionally, maybe. But these giant multinational corporations, these giant multi-billion dollar companies, they don't care. All that's just a negative on a balance sheet. It all comes down to how much they can put in the shareholders' pockets, how much they can put into their pockets. So am I surprised that hazmat violations are up? No. Am I surprised that trains are getting bigger? No. Am I surprised that the inspection times are less? No, of course not. Because this is what allowing industry to police itself gets you. When you don't have a strong counterbalance to corporate power. And look, our elected officials, they understand it. They know where the power lies. And it's not with you and me. It's with these big industries and their lobbying arms. And until we start taking that back and make this a nonpartisan issue, and we yell at all sides to ensure that this never happens to anyone, it's going to continue to happen. Not just in rail, but in every industry. You know, look at the thing that happened with Southwest not too long ago, where they had thousands of people grounded because of their screw up. That everything to do with their mismanagement, their corporate greed. Do we hold them accountable? No. So there's a lot to be angry about. And working people, let's figure out how we get angry about the right stuff. This, being angry about this, this is the right stuff. The poison that we're being pushed by our friends on the right, not so much. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Is 25 grand for a town enough? $5 a person? Would you take the $5? And they're coming around. They're asking people to, hey, can we come in your house and be free of any liability? Did make sure your air and your conditions are okay? Would you sign it? Boy, I sure hope not. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
If you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in 2 segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
See, this is why I don't find it of any surprise whatsoever that, according to the Associated Press, half of the Americans that they surveyed in a recent poll indicate that they believe national news organizations intentionally mislead, misinform, or persuade the public to adopt a particular point of view through their reporting. This is the foxification of our news media. This is the cable news stuff, because it's not news. I get people all the time going, well, you know, you think you're a journalist. No, I'm not a journalist. You think you're a news program. No, not a news program. If you're coming here thinking that I'm reporting you the news, you're wrong. This is an opinion program. This is a talk program. I want to hear other people's opinions. I want to hear thoughts. But this isn't news. News, I go to news organizations, real ones, not the F channel, not CNN. I go to real ones. I look at the New York Times, the Washington Post. I even look at the right-wing stuff, the Washington Examiner. I look at news outlets and filter through what they're saying. So am I surprised that half of the country who gets their news from the F channel thinks that their news is biased? No, not a bit. Especially when you look at the reporting on this derailment. Because a handful of Republicans thought, hey, this is a way to go attack Joe Biden and Pete Buttigieg, it's now become, it's a right-wing thing. And the focus is going to be, attacking, Buttigieg and Biden. I had people early on saying, Biden, he ordered an executive order to make this happen so we would forget about the balloons. And look, I'm sure on some quote-unquote news station, news channel, someone said that as if it were really true. I could just picture it. I can't. Someone in a nice shirt and tie with one of those really great green screen backgrounds that looks really official with the beautiful chyrons and the flashing images and everything going, breaking news. Inside Edition tells us, or whatever, Joe Biden signs executive order to derail train. Poisons thousands to cover up his vaccines. You can just see this happening. So it's not surprising to me. And since most people get their news from Facebook, which how that happened, it's not surprising that most of it's BS. I mean, what used to be The Onion is now what was once satirical. People are now starting to take serious. I've had people send me satirical articles going, see? I'm going, do you not see at the top of the page it says satire? And the answer is no, sadly, because we're so biased in our thoughts that, you know, the right wants to hate Joe Biden so badly and the left wants to hate Donald Trump so badly that it doesn't matter the source anymore. So am I shocked? No, not at all. Because the real news is bad enough. Corporate America is screwing us at every opportunity. That's the reality. Who unleashed them? I go back to my, and maybe it's just that I'm a little bit older and I remember talking to older people a lot. But we had an economy that was heavily regulated. We had an economy that ensured that workers were safer, had better opportunities to earn better wages. You know, I was reading a book today that we're going to have a guest on in a little bit. I was reading her book and she points out that the trucking industry, and I already knew this, but she actually put a number to it. In 1980, when deregulation was signed, a truck driver was making about 110 grand a year in today's dollars. That's down to $47,000 in today's dollars. Over the decade from when deregulation happened, wages for truck drivers dropped by 44%. And again, it's these bad neoliberal policies by both parties. Look, conservative Democrats and the Republican establishment that ram this stuff down our throat. So am I surprised that people are angry and grasping for something that they want to be true? Like Republicans care about working people? I know they're making a heavy pivot. They really are. They're making a heavy pivot. And this is one of those issues saying, oh no, we care. Yet I haven't heard the F channel talk about the people on the train. Because there are only, what, two or three? I haven't heard anyone say, you know, how come there weren't people on that train to make sure that when that fire started, that they saw it maybe 10 miles into when it started. So that maybe they could have begun this process of slowing down, made the derailment less bad. Who knows? Who knows what could have happened had you had, I don't know, someone there. The fact is we don't have someone there anymore. We've got technology, and at least they tell us. These detection systems that aren't regulated, aren't really even mandated, but the railroads put up the camera or the image just in case. And you wonder why where we are is where we are. And I look at this, am I surprised that half the country doesn't believe what they're being told? No, I'm actually surprised that number's not higher, especially when you look at Twitter. You got Elon Musk who bought Twitter specifically to destroy what it was and fired his engineer when his impressions weren't high enough. I mean, really, there's nothing funnier than a egotistical billionaire who feels jilted. I mean, I blocked him on Twitter just because that's not what people are doing. Because I think at some point there has to be some blowback. He's angry that Joe Biden's tweets got more impressions than his did. This is why having gazillionaires owning any monopolistic entity, having that kind of power is bad. My grandparents' generation understood that. And as I was saying, you know, that generation was, business was heavily regulated to ensure safe conditions, to ensure good wages, to ensure that people were held accountable. And we're in a moment right now where, you know, corporate America knows they can cause catastrophe. They can do horrible things. And we're just going to eat it. Because the cleanup here, yeah, there's going to be a big bill that'll be paid. There'll be some money that'll go out. They'll make a huge thing out of it and say, look how much we paid for this. But the long-term costs, we the people are going to end up eating. The externalities of all of the illnesses that are going to happen because of this, all of the suffering that's going to happen because of this, all of the lost wages, all of the broken families, That's not going to be borne by Norfolk Southern. They don't care. They live in their 8,000 square foot mansions.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
CBS News Brief. Honored during a vigil tonight on the Michigan State University campus, the three students killed and five wounded in Monday's shooting. School Provost Teresa Woodruff.
Our pain and grief, words and hope, must be that clarion call to build a more hopeful tomorrow.
For shooting and killing 10 black people at a supermarket in Buffalo, New York, Peyton Gendron will spend the rest of his life in prison. Gendron offered an apology. Judge Susan Egan responded,
"The damage you have caused is too great, and the people you have hurt are too valuable to this community."
New details about what may have caused the toxic train crash in East Palestine, Ohio, CBS's Michael Kaplan.
The train that derailed in Ohio earlier this month experienced mechanical issues on its route before the derailment. That's according to employees who worked on the train and were concerned about what they believed was the train's excess length and weight.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Big Bend to Menominee Falls, always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. While recreational and medical marijuana use remain illegal in Wisconsin, a new report from the Wisconsin Policy Forum finds that half of Wisconsinites over 21 live within a 75-minute drive of a dispensary in another state. Both Illinois and Michigan allow for recreational use of marijuana, and Minnesota, which allows medical cannabis, appears close to approving recreational pot. The report also says that last year, Illinois brought in just over $445 million in state taxes from marijuana sales. The $111 million collected in Michigan in 2021 went to K-12 schools, transportation, and funding for municipalities and counties. A winter storm watch is in effect for most of southeastern Wisconsin from 3 a.m. Thursday to 12 a.m. Friday. Snow expected to pick up after 7 a.m. before ending around 7 p.m., with totals ranging anywhere from 5 to 10 inches. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
Civic Media promised you something big to celebrate our new and still growing network of radio stations. When we announced the one-day $1 million advertising giveaway for Wisconsin businesses, you responded.
Just wanted to echo your sentiments about the advertising. That's really a cool deal and really remarkable.
$1 million of free advertising. Now, if you missed this chance to work with our team, go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. One of our local sales pros will get right back to you. Civicmedia.us and sponsorship.
As goes Wisconsin.
Mandela Barnes, future runs. Not yes, not no.
You know, I'm not closing the door, right? Like, taking a loss is not easy. And it's tough, too, when it's such a razor-thin margin. You know, I know some people who just get up right away and decide they want to run again. Like,
yeah.
I'm not there. But, you know, it's all timing.
Celebrating all things Wisconsin. As goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Weekdays 11 to 2 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Earl Ingram.
I mean, for heaven's sakes, anybody who's heard Congresswoman Bobart from Colorado and Marjorie Taylor Greene and others, you just have to ask the question, if I'm a Republican, why would I continue to support that foolishness?
Asking the tough questions, searching for the answers we're all looking for. The Earl Ingram Show. Weekday mornings 8 to 11 on Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
Being a father is an honor, a challenge, a duty, a celebration, and a testimony. I want to be legendary for you because I found everything to live for.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Going the other way. Happy Valentine's Day.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Marsha Blackburn, senator from Tennessee, tweeted out, I think it was yesterday, that she wants to ban TikTok, I guess it is, which I'm not against. She wants to ban Confucius Institutes, ban CCP-owned farmland in America, bring manufacturing back to the USA, and hold Xi Jinping accountable. And I'm like, You know, I think I wrote that tweet before Twitter existed. I kind of think that this, you know, not a bad idea. Maybe we could get some people to come on board. But I got to tell you, I find it amazing that this balloon thing has taken on such wow, insanity. And now, as I said from the beginning, and I do not back up, this was a trial balloon. I don't think they were gathering anything important. It was a trial balloon to see how we would react, and we failed. And here to share some thoughts on the big balloon and, well, what Marsha and the Republicans now who've seen the light. They've seen the light. What are they going to do? That's why I've asked Emily De La Bruyere to come talk with us. She's the co-founder of Horizon Advisory, horizonadvisory.org, their website. Emily, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me.
So I want to get your thoughts first on this whole balloon thing. I said from the beginning, I'm sure we knew when they were building the damn thing that it was coming this way, and they followed it all the way here, which you're now seeing reports that happened. But it was my initial impression that, you know, they're doing this as to see, just to throw chum into the water and see us eat each other. And we failed this test. I'm curious your thoughts.
I absolutely agree that the balloon is more significant for the response and what that response indicates about today's attitudes towards China, U.S.-China relations, and fundamental contradictions between the two countries than it is about like what precisely this balloon itself was doing and its security implications. I would add two things to your framing. The first is that the balloon was also just testing, I think, the U.S. resolve to respond, how much Washington and how much the American people were willing to escalate to see this as an actual threat to engage in something closer to conflict. So a trial balloon for sentiment and willingness to act, as well as for anything else. And just the other thing is that I think that this whole balloon incident underscores quite how real the threat of China has become for the American population and the American individual in a way that was not the case. That was not as acute, as tangible, and that didn't lead to the same kind of like real desire for action 2 years ago.
No, I mean, now we're going to have a Senate investigation. John Tester is going to lead up the spy balloons, the balloon gate. Let's call it balloon gate. We're going to lead into this, and we're going to have hearings, and they're going to be all this stuff. And you go, you know, I remember when we were in the Cold War, you know, during the USSR years, this kind of stuff happened all the time, and the country didn't freak out. And it wasn't used as a thing to pit people against each other. This should be, and I said the first time it came out, this should be something that unites us around the idea of taking on China. This should be the thing that brings us together and go, yeah, we don't want them over our heads, but we also don't want them buying the ground under our feet either.
100% on all of those fronts. And there's this weird disconnect where, on the one hand, incidents like this are great for like waking up the American population and hammering home how much we don't want China not only like over our heads spying, but also showing blatant disrespect for American sovereignty and security. But the answer is not all to obsess about balloons and all to run after the ball and decide that, yeah, all of the commissions, all the investigations, all the resources have to be allocated towards a Chinese balloon project. Like, the answer is to address China's threat broadly.
Exactly. But here's the thing. I see people, you know, complaining about the balloons. They look up. I got to see the balloons. But I don't see people deleting their TikTok accounts, if they even can, off their phones. And if you read the terms of service and you know people, I've asked people to try and take it off. They can't get it off. There's no way. They collect every keystroke. They collect all your images. They're collecting so much information and data on us. They don't need the damn balloons. They got the TikTok.
Yeah, like China is a huge threat. China's surveillance and efforts to control the American population are a huge threat. And those are so much more pervasive in our society than any individual balloon story. And I'm torn because this balloon case is amazing for, again, the narrative impact, the rallying call it's provided. And that's partly because it's so absurd as a word, as an idea. It's partly because you could look up and see the balloon if you were in Montana at the right time. The issue is that there has to be that sinew that connects amazing story, dominated the news cycle for 10 days, balloon gate. Two, okay, here's a real strategic comprehensive action vice China that includes the things that, as you said, actually really matter deep down, like TikTok.
See, because here's the thing. It only became a story. And this is the thing with the derailment as well. It only became a story when Republicans thought they could hurt Biden and the administration. That's it. And again, I see a lot of words. I don't see any action. And so there are a lot of tweets. There are a lot of, you know, people on the F channel, you know, slamming their fist on the table, wagging their finger, doing all that. But I'm not seeing legislation. Where is the, well, fine, let's ban TikTok. Let's do that. Fine, let's go and reclaim some of the corporations and the land and the things. If you're going to go this route, where's the policy? Where's the actions?
I'm going to take what you said and put two slightly more positive twists on it, because as you pointed out, for once, I'm not wearing black today. First, I think that there's another reason this became a big story. And I think that's that the American population was involved, that individuals looked up, saw the balloon, filmed it, started telling this story. And that to me suggests that there's another power here, like, that we're not talking about. And that's that the American people can make something a big deal when they feel that's important for the country and for national security. And you know, I'll always be optimistic about that as a potential reality.
No, I hope so. I hope you're right. You know, but again, you know, I guess I grew up in an era where this stuff happened fairly often, and there was faith that we're dealing with it. We know they're there. The fact that there are people, you know, running around saying, you know, Biden didn't know it was going anywhere until I saw it with my, I said from the beginning, we probably knew as they were making it what they were going to do with it. And we see the reports now that they saw it launch, they were following from launch all the way across and actually gathering data off of it. We can't even have that conversation without people with their hair on fire.
The other thing, going back to your initial point, which does not resolve the current issue of where the action is, but I think gives some hope in the future, is that the other clear lesson from the Republican pressure on the Biden administration with respect to the balloon is that every political incentive in Washington right now is to take a harder line stance on China.
And that's a good thing.
As you said, like, there's a risk that that's just a narrative thing and no one's actually checking politicians' rhetoric against their realities. But if that checking can happen, and if politicians can actually be held accountable, which goes back to the power of the American population, can be held accountable for converting narrative to action, that's where there's real potential. Because clearly this is where every driving force is going.
You listen to The Rick Smith Show with Emily De La Bria. She's a co-founder of Horizon Advisory, horizonadvisory.org, the website. We'll get links out on social media. So to that point, enough talking about the balloon at this moment. Strategically, if we do move on policy, what can we do to hold China more accountable? What are you advocating we should be doing? Because look, you talk to the average person on the street, you know, we want manufacturing done in this country, and I think Biden is doing as best he can to reshore some of that. We want to make rebuild our infrastructure and have it made in America. We want to do those things. How do we, without starting a hot war, how do we navigate this new, what I gotta assume is the next Cold War? How do we navigate this that doesn't put us in a destructive position for ourselves?
Yeah, I mean, there are more tactical things, but things that really matter, both on the defense and on the more proactive offense, or, you know, investing in a competitive America. You mentioned, you know, TikTok and China's pervasive use of, quote, you know, ostensibly commercial entities to increase its leverage, increase its collection of data, and try to shape our behaviors. We should be taking real action on those companies. As we invest in domestic manufacturing, we should be doing so in a way that actually protects against Chinese leverage over our manufacturing. So let's not build electric vehicle battery plants that depend on Chinese technology, or that are joint ventures with Chinese entities and support those with government money. Let's, if we're going to partner with trusted economies and also try to build domestic champions. Throughout, if we've identified critical value chains that matter, let's invest all the way up the value chain. So we're not just developing American technology that requires critical materials from China, but actually developing whole trusted supply chains.
Can we do that? I mean, you know, I've been told that, you know, the 4 years of the previous administration and are basically leaving the international stage, China filled that void and basically gobbled up most of the natural resources we need in the battery production arena, and that we're kind of dependent on them in a certain way. Or is that not correct?
So China has actively for decades been investing in international sources and domestic processing for what they see as the critical inputs into batteries and other emerging industries. That doesn't mean that there's not a chance to compete with them, including through domestic resources. In many cases, these aren't necessarily scarce materials. They're just materials that we haven't invested in mining or processing of and that require productive capability. Also, partnering with allies and partners who do have reserves. Canada is a great example of a country that has enormous natural resources, and we should be working with Canada in terms of developing more secure supply chains, as well as with other partners. And generally, like, we are putting an extraordinary amount of money into strategic supply chains. All of that effort should start at the beginning of the supply chains, because if not, I mean, actually, as Chinese sources say, we're building on an adversarial foundation. There's also just across the board, like, bigger picture strategic actions I think we should be taking. So, for example, I would argue that we should be calling into question China's permanent normal trade relations status. They've aggressively defied every commitment that was made when we gave them PNTR. Why are we not talking about revoking that status now? And that's the kind of, like, big picture system level action that could impose real costs on China.
So let me ask you this, because, you know, I've advocated this for years. This is not new in my arena. We should have never given them this. It should have been temporary if we did, with sunsets and goals and all kinds of things that just never happened. Are we not so tied into them that at this point you would cause catastrophe? Inflation would go through the roof, and this would become a political football, that, you know, Chinese money that is so pervasive in our country and our economy would just whoever tried to touch it would be destroyed.
I mean, I think there are two sides to that question. The first is, like, the process of how this happens, right? There have to be clear signals sent to the private sector probably first, but, you know, it's not an overnight situation, so that there can be investments made. It's not absolutely devastating. And just because of inertia in the process, that probably would happen. For example, we might switch to a yearly debate in Congress as to whether to give China PNTR status for that year or whatever the phrase is. And then ultimately that would make it more possible for incentivize the private sector to find alternatives. But the other part is, generally, like, no matter what, competing with China the way we have to compete from China and disentangling ourselves from China the way we have to, it's going to hurt, right? That's going to come at a cost. Inflation will go up. We will feel it. But that's a short-term cost versus long-term losing out entirely on American prosperity, security, and the international system.
And this is where you and I will absolutely agree. I think where we differ is that, you know, I think this balloon, again, back to the damn balloon, was a trial balloon to see how we would react, to see how we would, you know, across party lines, eat each other. And I think we failed that test. I think if you saw that kind of inflation from reshoring more faster, I think you would see the same kind of dynamics. Or do you disagree? Do you think there is a way that we could make a campaign? Is there a way the parties would come together and say, no, this is what we're doing, and we feel your pain kind of moment? Do you have those kind of high aspirations and hopes?
I mean, I really want that to be possible because I don't see an alternative. And I also, like, there is a part of me that remains convinced, and again, it's an optimistic part, but remains convinced that as it becomes fully internalized that we do have an outside authoritarian adversarial force that's threatening our country, how can the two parties in America not work together on that front? How can that not bring us together? And maybe I'm totally out to lunch and this is rose-colored glasses, but because it is such a necessity for any progress moving forward, I'm going to continue to maintain that it's possible.
So in looking at what Biden's doing thus far, and look, I think it's I've been saying that the thing that I like about the policies that they're moving on and they're not doing it fast enough, and there are things that I don't like. But the fact that we're moving away from, you know, 40, 50 years of neoliberalism and starting to talk about bringing reshoring manufacturing and starting talking about an economy that works for working people in the ways that my grandparents' generation built, to me, that there's hope in that. But sadly, again, these are all attack points from folks who just, it's just trolling to say, hey, I mean, Biden's doing horrible stuff. When the reality is, I think long term, we're going to look back and see this as a transformational period.
And you can even just look at the narrative of the past few years and see how transformational it has been. I mean, what you just said, those are now talking points for both parties. Were those at anywhere in the drinking water 5 years ago?
Nope.
And I'll add that, like, on what, again, might be my foolish optimism, I do think there's hope in looking at the track record of the select few legislators in Congress who work in a bipartisan way. And that track record is most obvious and most successful when it comes to legislation and positioning relevant to China and to American industrial capacity. And it's a select few, it's not a lot, but that is a real sign, I think, of potential and potential for working across the aisle towards, like, the most important economic and security action we can be taking.
Yeah, last question I've got for you. Obviously, the balloon has gotten us to make aggressive moves. In fact, we've shot down a couple more balloons. I'm waiting for what else we're going to shoot down. Do you see China ramping this up, or do you think they got what they wanted?
That's a great question. And there's so much uncertainty because there's still so much uncertainty in this program. I think China was taken aback when we shot down the balloon. And I think that was not something Beijing was counting on, and that really did put them on the defensive in a way that had not been factored into any calculus. Now, as we devolve into reflexive infighting and resorting to tools that don't work, I think Beijing, you know, is probably getting back into its more comfortable trend. But again, you know, we're 10 days in and this is still the big story. Yeah. And the American population is still pushing for something. And one of the interesting things about China is you can tell when there's uncertainty about what precisely that question, whether they're ramping up or ramping down, because they don't really solidify around a narrative. And that's the case. So that's a long way of saying I think China's figuring that out right now.
Yeah, nobody knows. Yeah, we'll see if they shoot one of our balloons down. Not allowed to say that. But we'll see. But Emily, I appreciate the time. As always, good stuff.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. Remember, check out Emily's website, horizonadvisory.org. We'll get links out on social media. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1950. That was the day the Red Scare took its toll on the U.S. labor movement. The Congress of Industrial Organizations expelled the International Union of Mine, Mill, and Smelter Workers for their alleged communist ties. Although small in numbers, communist organizers had played an important role in building the large industrial unions that were the core of the CIO. During the CIO's 1949 convention, this anti-communist hysteria was on full display. There, the CIO delegates decided to bar any individual with communist affiliations from serving as union officers. Their panic did not stop there, as the CIO leadership also voted to revoke the charters of unions they deemed too closely aligned with the communists. Immediately, the convention threw out the United Electrical, Radio, and Machine Workers. During the 1950s, more unions were caught up in the purge, including the International Union of Longshoremen and Warehousemen. In all, the anti-communist frenzy saw 11 unions ousted from the House of Labor. According to a report to Congress by the Department of Labor, the cause of these expulsions was that the union's, quote, espousal of Soviet Russia became increasingly distasteful to the CIO leadership and rank-and-file membership. Cold War fear-mongering had effectively isolated the most left-leaning unions in the country. The impact on the labor movement was long-lasting. After the purge, unions took a much more moderate stance on things like civil rights. This hampered their organizing efforts in the South. To this day, there is less union representation in southern states. It also pushed the CIO closer to the Democratic Party and paved the way for the CIO's reunification with the more politically moderate American Federation of Labor.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So as I said, I'm optimistic about what the Biden administration is doing and moving us in a direction that's going to reshore some manufacturing and take this on. This should be something that brings us together. Everybody I talk to, everybody says we've got to claw back what we've given off to China. We've got to rebuild our manufacturing facilities. In fact, you know, when we took the tour over the over October and into November before the election, and we went into places that have lost massive amounts of jobs and manufacturing capacity, they all said the same thing. You know, we want someone who's going to fight for us. We want somebody who's going to fight for industry and keep jobs here instead of allowing corporate America to seek out the cheapest, most exploitable labor wherever they can find it, China. We want those jobs here. Now, Emily's right. You know, the transition's going to be painful. It was all sunshines and rainbows when these corporations were leaving and holding workers, you know, hostage and screwing them over. But this is one of those moments where I'm optimistic of what the administration's doing, but I still fear we've got the quote unquote opposition party who all they want to do is be opposition. There's no plan. There's no thoughts. There's no way of, hey, how are we going to actually do this? That's my problem. Let's quick get a phone call in. Alice on one. How are we doing, Alice?
We're doing okay. I survived the containment camp. But I wanted to tell you that I was talking to one of the local Trump supporters, and their daughter-in-law and son live like 10 minutes away on the Pennsylvania side of where the train wreck was in Ohio. And they were saying that some of the fumes and stuff were drifting over there. And she was just going on and on about she didn't know why Biden and who, what, and what not didn't do something about it. And I was so proud of myself. I bit my tongue. And I just said, I don't know what's going on. Because, well, you know, trying to reason with them and saying, well, you know, actually, let's trace this back. Wasn't going to do any good, but
yeah, no.
So
tracing this back
some of
doesn't.
Them are sitting up and noticing it.
No, but here's the thing: tracing this back doesn't just stop with Trump. I mean, this goes back, you know, decades and decades of deregulation and of this ideology of the companies will police themselves and do the right thing. This is decades in the making, and these kind of catastrophes happen, maybe not in this kind of spectacular fashion, but this kind of stuff happens every day, and workers and communities get screwed over and end up holding the bag in this. And for me, I want this to be the learning lesson out of this catastrophe, that this doesn't have to happen all the time.
Oh, I know. I agree with you. You know, that it's been going on for a good 45 years when they started cutting the regulations. But I just thought to myself, there's no use saying, well, you know, let's go back a few decades and check out some of the you know,
that's a narrative you didn't want to get into. I got you.
Have a good evening.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Alice. No, I mean, and she's not wrong. Look, this is a long explanation. There's no bumper sticker here. There's no, you know, blame Biden. You know, Biden did that. There's none of that here. This is a long explanation. This is business friendly run amok. this is, you know, corporations taking advantage of a political system that's starved for cash, because we've decided that corporations are people and they have the right to pollute, evidently. So am I surprised? No. And look, I don't blame Alice for not having a conversation around this, because it's hard to explain. It's hard to go all through, you know, decades and decades of this stuff. The fact that there were 40 railroad companies back in the 80s, we're down to 6. It's incredible. The fact that they had tens of thousands of more employees performing safety checks.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.